Sometimes leaders want to create a culture where I only want to hold you accountable for output. I don't care where you are. Just give me numbers. I'm not going to bother you that you were not here at 8:05. I want results. Hey guys, so I was reading an article titled Why People Stay, Using Job Embeddedness to Predict Voluntary Turnover by Terence Michel et al., which was published in the Academy of Management Journal. Ow! Because that's how I roll on a normal Saturday, NJ. Me, I'm reading academic articles. I don't know what you guys do on a Saturday. Cesar, what do you normally do on a Saturday?
You must actually motivate me to do the same.
Sabelo,
maybe I'll be better.
What do you normally do on a Saturday morning?
I'm sure you know I'm an avid marathon runner, so I wake up and run.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, every morning I do marathons.
All right, I read articles.
But I read
articles, darling.
Yeah.
So this article is about why do people stay in jobs, and a concept that we're going to introduce now called job embeddedness. And I've always wanted to also say that thing called et al. That's how you prove that you've been at business school. You've studied something, at tertiary.
You've done assignments.
Et al.
Et al.
In fact, I argue that on your first date, you must always hoy the word et al.
Just to test
whether someone
is. Where are we?
NQF5.
Which level? That works.
Anyway, let me be serious. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another enlightening. I was panicking about whether I was going to pronounce that word correctly. Enlightening episode of Organizational Behavior with Sipio Moyo. The premise of the podcast is that work doesn't have to suck. I don't know where people get this idea that work is supposed to suck. I'm your host, Sipio Moyo, and today we have a topic that I think will intrigue you. We're asking the question, why do people stay? I think there's a song like that. What does it say? Should I? Maybe I shouldn't sing.
No,
why do people stay and why do people go in their jobs, that is, not in relationships? I think there's a show called Ask a Man for that in South Africa, where they talk about relationships. As I said, our discussion is rooted in groundbreaking research, specifically the study titled Why People Stay, Using Job Embeddedness to Predict Voluntary Turnover. The authors provided some invaluable insights into the factors that influence employees' decision to stay or leave their organizations. So we don't want to just have an academic discussion. So that's not what we're about. We want practical insights that can help us create great workplaces. This is why we exist. If you were wanting some gossip, there's another podcast for that that shall remain nameless, although I watch it. So to help us dissect this research and its practical implication, we have two distinguished guests. Cesar Mpanza is an HR executive lead at SKX Protivity. She's a seasoned HR executive with a wealth of experience in talent management and HR. Seasoned in this case does not mean old, guys. It just means there's a song called HR Saiqala Zingaga. Abangaga. Majese Zingaga. You've been doing this thing forever. So Cesar is... Yeah?
Mkanchubovu
in Sizulu. That's powerful, Zulu. Cesar is a former colleague and a friend. In fact, you interviewed me for one of my jobs. Do you remember?
Which one was it? Was it a training? Netbank.
Head of learning. What you interviewed.
Oh, yeah. So, yes,
and I'm good
that.
In interviews, ne?
Yeah, you are. You're absolutely. You're fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Well, you got the job, I should tell you.
Sometimes it also depends who was in the panel.
If
other people in the panel were worse, I could still get the job, but I was like, oh God, we must choose one.
You know? Wow.
Sabelo Mieni is also joining us. He's the CEO of the Institute of People Management, a professional HR professional body in South Africa. He's an experienced award-winning business developer, entrepreneur, and business turnaround strategist. I always love looking at people when you introduce them. They have that shy look.
Is that me? Who wrote this thing about me? Who these things about
me?
He's the leader of Sisegelo Sustainability Institute. He'll tell us what that is. And founder of Sebenguni Investment. He speaks on emerging technologies, human resources, leadership, and entrepreneurship. I shared a stage with Usabelo recently. Well, I think I should say I saw your talk, but you didn't see mine. We did a hit and run in that conference. You know, these keynote speakers. Apparently, there's a science when you want to be taken seriously in conferences, you must speak and go. Is that true?
I don't know. You don't know? Welcome. But I just believe that you can't be sitting in conferences the whole day as an entrepreneur.
Yeah,
you have to go make money.
Yeah.
You have to go make
money. There has to be work. Cesar, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Are you glad to be here?
I am happy to be here.
All right. And
first time on a podcast. Actually, first time on any media platform. Mm-hmm. So this is quite interesting.
I don't have that thing called Welcome, sis.
I have it on my phone.
Okay, it's too late.
Cesar, welcome. Just as a bit of intro, can you just tell us about your journey?
Yeah.
Where are you from and how do you find yourself at the point where you're one of the most sought after HR directors in South Africa? You are sought after.
Sought after.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. Well, I actually come from Newcastle. It's a small town in KZN.
Mm.
Born and bred there.
Oh,
and I moved to... No, I'm at that day.
I'm at that day.
Oh, no. Not to Suzwin. Definitely not.
Not that there's
anything wrong with us. I'm not saying there's anything
implying,
wrong.
No.
I'm from Matete and I'm very proud of where I come from.
Mm.
And I moved to Joburg, straight after school to study.
Mm.
Initially, I wanted to study clinical psychology because I've always been interested in like the psyche of a human being and in why, you know, what motivates us to do certain things in life. And I think I was a third year when I was actually, I had to major, and I majored in clinical psychology. Wow. And I think what I found out while I was majoring in clinical psychology is that actually I thought it was too overwhelming for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this is not actually something that I want to do mm-hmm. in the future. And a lot of those things will happen in life, right? Mm-hmm. Where you are so set on studying something, but then when you start studying it and then you start to understand what it's all about, then you figure actually that, you know, maybe it's not for me. Maybe I should try something else. And people shouldn't be scared to try things that are new. So I went back to varsity to repeat third year and now to focus on industrial psychology.
Okay.
And I think it worked out for me because, you know, being this person who's always interested in understanding why people do certain things, you know, being in a business environment was also going to give me that opportunity to say, how can I, as a person, impact an organization positively so such that the people in the organization get to experience it in a different way, in a positive way? And also, how can I add value to an organization such that it is able to accomplish its strategic goals and, you know, it's able to grow and prosper and become a big entity. And so that's how I ended up in HR ultimately. And yeah, I think in my journey, I've met a lot of people and I've been inspired by a lot of people. And some of the people that have inspired me have basically contributed to where I am right now. You know, you'll know some of them. It's been a fantastic journey. It's been a learning journey. I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly evolving as an individual. And yeah, but I'm happy where I'm at right now. You know, I'm quite content.
We are so glad that you ended up specializing more in industrial psych because that's literally why we are here.
Yes.
To argue that the workplace doesn't have to be this thing that people enjoy.
Yeah.
But they can actually benefit. It can be an environment that actually be a catalyst to people's dreams. So I'm very, very glad you're here. Sabelo, your journey fascinates me because you're not really traditionally an HR person. Tell us about your story. If I were to Google or go and check GPT right now and put Sabelo Biene, what am I likely to find?
Nothing. No, thank you so much. I think naturally I am, though. So I grew up in Swaziland, now known as Eswatini. But I was born in the Free State, Putarichaba.
Really?
Yeah, so that's where my mom comes from. And my dad was here in Johannesburg, then that side of Mpumalanga, Piet Retief, relocated to Swaziland. And that's where I spent the rest of my life. And I think the influence has, the biggest people who have been an influence in my life is my grandfather and my grandmother, because I grew up with them. My grandfather was a community leader. He was very colorful in, you know, he wanted to get involved in every community project that was happening just for the development of the community. And he always took us as the kids and got us involved. And my grandmother was an entrepreneur. She was farming tobacco, so we got involved. But obviously, growing up, you know, you did not realize that you were surrounded by this greatness. Mm. It's only now, later on in life, that you realize that the influence actually comes from there. Mm. So yeah, I think growing up, I wanted to be a journalist.
Wow.
And I was very lucky that my dad would come back with newspapers and I would, you know, get a stack. Sokala Duma was this other one that was popular, but I would read anything.
Football one as well?
Yeah, football. Okay. Yeah, so I would read that. So I've always had an interest in, you know, in the art space, journalism, being an editor, writing. And but unfortunately, you know, I did not take that. I did not take that route. When I was accepted at the university, there was no journalism. Actually, there was journalism qualification. But you know, when you finish school, then everyone, and you've passed so well, yes, everyone wants to say, do this, do that. They're like, go and do law.
Mm.
Like, okay, my aunt is a lawyer, so let me go and
they
register
have money.
For. Yeah, they can. Yeah, so I got to university 2 weeks. I'm like, okay, this is not what I want. Where is this journalism? I look at it, they say, no, we are fully subscribed. Then I look at, okay, what's close to that? Then my uncle then recommends that I do a qualification in English and literature.
Ow!
Yeah, so then I registered for humanities. And my qualification is strange because it's environmental science and then English.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's those old type of curriculum systems that were combining multiple disciplines, of which I think it's actually a good thing now.
Very good thing.
To think about it.
We're
so,
kind of realizing now that you actually need divergent views and people who come from different streams just to disrupt the thinking that might be happening in the boardroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
But because I've always been someone who likes to do things, even at university, I started organizations focusing on peer education and counseling. I think at the time, HIV and AIDS was just ravaging the youth in Southern Africa, in particular Swaziland. Then I started getting involved with, multinational companies, where I was sourcing funding. And we'll take some of the products and I'll sell them on campus. That is condoms in particular. Obviously, they were subsidized.
Yes, yes.
So you can imagine on campus, I was that guy where people would go to 3 a.m. Knock, knock.
Oh, no.
Sabelo.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Come tomorrow, they don't even pay.
Yeah.
So I think the science of entrepreneurship then started there. Yeah. While I was at university, then there was this company called Technosave. I still remember their slogan. It was "Believe, Begin, Become."
Ow!
Yeah, and I was like, "Okay, what is this about?" It was about taking people who had an interest in entrepreneurship and developing them. Me and my friend decided to enter this business plan competition. Okay. Where we're starting a web solutions company to digitize. This was like back 2006-07, I think. So the 4IR Cool Aid was still, light and not as strong as now, concentrated, for lack of a better word. So we entered that, and then I was taken into this journey of entrepreneurship, doing a program for about 6 months, understanding how to start and run a business.
Wow.
I was like, this is the thing that I want.
Yeah. What program was this, in case someone is listening and thinking,
it's a Technosave program.
Oh, it was from Technosave.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they have a specific focus across the world. And I think in SA also Technosave is an SA focusing on maybe agricultural sector. But we entered that business plan competition. We went up to as far as being named top 20, getting seed capital of 30,000.
Wow.
Now I'm someone who can, write a business plan, sell, and I'm doing my final year. Then I graduate, and then we had to start the business. You know, when you are young, my friend went to Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
I came back to SA. But coming to SA, I still continued to try and pursue business. Mm. But then I met with my mentor. My mentor said, go to corporate a bit. Mm. Just learn corporate. And he asked me, what is that you like? And I said, human development. Mm. And then he said, go and focus on the education space then.
Let me just disturb you. You'll continue from there. And that idea of people saying, I know deep down I'm an entrepreneur and I don't want this corporate stuff. Do you believe that your work in corporate actually helped you to become an even better entrepreneur?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can tell that. I can say that without any doubt.
Is it?
Because if you look at my business, the one thing I always say to people is that I can do everything competently.
Yeah.
Effectively, because I've been through the journey understanding it. Of course, there are those who come and study business and run it successfully.
Mm.
But I just find that with me, it helped me a lot to go to corporate and learn the science of that particular business.
Mm.
And I just compare myself with other people who are in the same space who maybe never went to corporate, and you can see the huge differences even in terms of execution and understanding just the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not mean you can still fail, by the way. Because
mm-hmm.
I always say to some of the guys, we're in the education space, we get someone who's a great facilitator, they love this person.
Yeah.
And then this person thinks, okay, I can run
a business.
The business. Yeah.
Yes.
And then they start and they realize, okay, business is not just about the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about finding customers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have customers, you don't have business.
Someone once hurt me so much and said, Spiro, you don't have a business. You are just a freelancer. You've employed yourself.
Yeah, self-employment.
Yeah. No, thank you very much. And I think that helps because I think there are a lot of, and we'll delve into the topic later, there are a lot of politics, Caesar, in corporate about, I remember about just who brought this service provider. So I always feel that entrepreneurs who've never worked in corporate, one of the things they never understand is the pressure of people in corporate around who brought this guy, and the risk you take when you have a service provider, and when you're dealing with an entrepreneur that has been to corporate, at least they understand those dynamics and they understand that your reputation is in line as the person. So any comment on that?
No, absolutely. You almost have to think twice whenever you bring someone on board. It's always a good idea to have experienced the person and understand, you know, their value proposition and what they can do in order for you to be able to sell it internally and to gain their trust, you know, from your colleagues to say, you know, bring the service provider on board and let's see what they can do. It's quite hard to try and sell someone that you have never really
experienced,
you know. It becomes a bit of a challenge.
Can I maybe just add?
Yeah, sure.
It's interesting you raise that because yesterday I was just speaking with someone and she was telling me that, you know what, guys, corporate is a system. I might be working here, but it does not mean I will necessarily get you in because there are certain things that are in place that, you know, they must be followed. So she was just saying, you know, sometimes, you know, our friends, they don't understand that and they get angry. Why are you not giving me business? They don't understand that this thing is a system. It's been designed. It's there's a process in place. And I think I've experienced it myself when I was starting transitioning from corporate to business, where, you know, you work with some people and you expect that Spiro will give me business because we know. But Spiro, you know, he works within a system. It's not an automatic thing. But because I have worked with him and they know what I can deliver over time, then, you know, they start giving you maybe something small just to prove yourself. And because it's their brand at the end of the day to say, you keep on bringing these people who disappoint us.
100%.
So it's quite important what you just said now in terms of service providers.
This conversation is going somewhere else and I'm loving it.
So I was going to say and just add on what he was saying, just in terms of the processes. And the processes are there for a reason, right? It's to really to mitigate risk. They serve as a form of control. you know, because these things can stand to be abused, right? You can bring your friends or, you know, to come and provide a service. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the company gains no value out of it. So those certain processes are put there just as mitigating controls to ensure that, you know, we control risk that could come with bringing on different service providers.
There's a very famous clip, I think, on TikTok. This lady, she speaks in Sipedi, South African language. She says, "Relokeleng, squeeze us into the industry, relokeleng." And there's always a sense, and I think we're gonna maybe have one last comment on this. There's always a sense that you guys, Sabelo, you've opened doors to these corporates, and you are literally locking us out. You don't want us to benefit, and you keep using words like corporate is a system. How do we crack that code then? If I'm young, I'm trying out a business, how do I even get to a point where a big corporate can use me? Is it maybe become a subcontractor of a subcontractor and then eventually you'd kind of climb the value chain? Or is it about maybe reflecting deeply on my content? What are some of the things that you could suggest there?
I would say people do business with other people because they trust them. They like them, they know them. It's easy. But on top of that, I always talk about value. What value are you bringing? I find a lot of entrepreneurs, they can articulate that when they approach potential, you know, companies. How are you different from SMP? You know, what is it that you are selling that is going to make you different from the other service providers?
Your unique value proposition.
Yeah, your unique value proposition, USP. And they struggle with that. But also, I just feel like we are not patient. I can tell you, there are companies that I approached maybe 3 years ago. We are only doing work now. So it's about how do you keep in touch with them. Some of them I will keep on, you know, try my product or service for free. It's a freemium, you know maybe there's a program that's running, and I've met my target. But because I want them to experience this thing, then I would invite them, come and experience this, and then they get to see and feel it. Oh, okay, this thing actually works, this is good. And then they go and they open the doors for you.
It's always interesting. I think some companies will have their favorite service provider, and I remember one time where their favorite service provider was sick or someone, and they literally said, "We're only coming to you because so and so is sick." I'm like, that's an opportunity.
Yeah.
I know I might not be your favorite now. But if you get that opportunity, then you try and deliver on it. So I'm really, really loving those tips. Yeah.
But you see, I like your mindset. Because other people will say, okay.
They'll be offended.
No, yeah, they'll be offended. Like, okay, you know what? They see themselves as second fiddle.
Yeah.
And you are saying, no, this is an opportunity. Absolutely. They are squeezing me in, literally. And I'll make sure that I run with it and I'm not getting out.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Thinking about the world of work, then Caesar, that mindset is quite interesting, because I think that mindset can be applied to entrepreneurship, but also to employees. The kind of employees that you get into the business, for example, if you have someone who says, maybe we've taken them through learnerships, graduate programs, and if they have a mindset that says, I'm here, here's an opportunity, I must kill it in these 12 months.
Yes.
We're getting a lot of pushback from young people who say, stop putting us on learnerships, we want proper jobs. And they kind of feel that big corporates are using learnerships to have staff that is underpaid instead of looking at it as an opportunity. Do you see a lot of that?
So not necessarily, but I agree with you in that as someone at that level, for example, someone who's coming in as a learner, you need to be able to differentiate yourself from the rest. And there are people who do have that can-do attitude. And as leaders, you get drawn or you get attracted to a person like that who wants to do more. because that basically, then it's easier for you to judge the potential in terms of meeting the next level. But if you're going to sit there as a learner and expect things to come to you, because sometimes, unfortunately, leaders may not necessarily give you the kind of experience that you need. But if you're out there as a learner and you say, look, I've come here in this organization, I'm not properly utilized, and you actually, you know, voice it out and engage with somebody. There always is someone who's there to listen, whether it's an HR person, whether it's another leader from another department, just to say, please, I need something to do. And it's those type of people that get given other opportunities within the organization where they're able to then showcase their skills and they're able to showcase their potential, you know, in terms of meeting the next level. So I don't think that organizations are using learnership just as, you know, there's a bigger purpose. And the bigger purpose is that we want to give you the experience, but you also have to come with the attitude that says, I want to gain the experience. And I'm not solely going to rely on other people to give me that experience. I must also be out there and try and make sure that I get what I need to get.
In fact, you are known as one of those HR people who is harsh, man. Hey.
You don't look like you're harsh.
I'm harsh.
Hey, this one is harsh. Like, you know when people like try these things, like, oh, HR is not in our corner, it's in the management's corner, and shouldn't you be on our side than the employer's side? But you're saying people must also take initiative.
Yes, you know, take ownership of your own development. That's what we say. You know, I know we HR people always get accused of being on the side of the employer. I always say to people, I'm not on the side of the employer, I'm not on the side of the employee, I'm on the side of fairness and what is fair, you know, in terms of what we need to deliver for the organization. And I stand for fairness. And the nice thing about standing for fairness is that you know, you're able to show both sides, you know, that ultimately this is what we're wanting to achieve. And based on whether it's based on policies, or based on our values, or based on the behaviors that we want to see in the organization, ultimately this is it. This is what is fair, and this is what is going to be consistent for everybody. So, harsh, I don't know. I'm just very
principled.
Honest,
yeah.
And people sometimes do not appreciate honesty. And I think sometimes in many situations, sometimes we just need to be honest. And that's how I've been all my career. Obviously, sometimes it created enemies for me as I was going along, but I've always stood for what is fair.
And right.
So good. There's a research in organizational behavior. There are people who study what we call proactive career behaviors, which is PCBs, and they suggest that these proactive career behaviors, they can really contribute to career success. So if you think about things like showing initiative, taking accountability, the ability to build relationships inside and outside the organization, those kinds of things are important both in a bigger corporate space, but even if in your business, Sabelo, maybe you're employing 5-10 people, you cannot afford to have people who don't take accountability and not show initiative, particularly in a small business. So people should develop these things, right?
Fire them.
Easier said than done.
I just wanted to say, you know, I have a lot to say because I've been in the learnership space for the five years now, solid. And I have a lot to say, you know, in terms of what you said and what you said, because I'll get to answer your question, and maybe just allow me to say it.
Please do.
Just say it.
There are organizations who are implementing learnerships, being about honest for tick box exercise. Now that I've been in the space, maybe in your space, you've been doing it for a bigger purpose. So there are those who are ticking, especially international companies. They are just here. They don't even have the capacity or capacity to be hosting and employing these young people to host them. but I think there are companies who are doing this thing for the right reason. And one of the things when I got into the space that I didn't like was the sausage, you know, they're taking the learners and rotating them. This person, you look at their CVs, this person has been a stipendpreneur.
There's a word like that.
Stipendpreneur. They're just in it for the stipend.
Yeah.
Mm. They don't want to work. If they get the stipend, great. And some of them, they're in multiple learnerships at the same time because it's difficult to pick that.
Yeah.
So you find young people who are like that. And if you look at the research why these young people are unemployable, it's because they do not have the skills.
Yeah.
And when we say a skilled person, we mean someone who can actually come and do the work.
Mm.
And the purpose of a learnership, it's occupationally directed, right?
Yeah.
It means it's the theory and the practical. Yes. So in most cases, we've taken them through the theory, but there's no practical.
Mm.
So there's no acceleration of skills. So they just, forever being in this pattern of theory and not going to gain practical skills. And I think that's the biggest problems. And I think organizations and the government, we must look into this thing because it is not doing good for our young people.
Yeah.
The youth unemployment is high.
Yes.
I'm even talking about graduates.
Mm.
So learnerships, most of the people who do learnerships from matriculants.
Yeah.
So you get to interact with a graduate. They are not taking initiative.
Yeah.
They expect money. Self-directed learning is not embraced.
Yeah.
So as a small business, you cannot afford to have people who just come in and they don't take the initiative.
Yes.
Because, as a startup, you need to be entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And I like to say I'm a case study myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I started working, if you look at, my progression, within months I would get promoted.
Yeah.
Because maybe I had done entrepreneurship and everything that I was approaching in the corporate was, I was embracing that. I always say intrapreneur.
Yeah.
In sales, I knew that I had a target. Yes, the company will give you the resources, but if you are not taking the initiative, if you are not doing research, if you are not building relationships,
yes,
going out of your way, you are not going to succeed. That's the challenge with a lot of employees coming into small businesses.
Yeah.
They want to be given all the tools, but they are not initiative. Yeah. They don't innovate in terms of solving the problem. So it's a mindset issue that we just need to deal with.
Oh, please go.
Okay, so I was going to say, as much as it's quite important that people obviously adjust their mindset and they take the initiative and so on. In the same breath, probably at those levels, it's not that easy, which is why it is important for organizations to create platforms specifically for learners. Like in my organization, for example, we have a platform where we meet on every bi-monthly. We meet and we talk about what are the challenges, what's happening, are you getting the support that you need from your leader, what are the things that you want, that you're concerned about, from your what you're learning in theory, is it linking up with what you're getting on the ground? Mm-hmm. Are you getting the on the job support from your colleagues?
Mm-hmm.
and how are you experiencing the organization? And it's quite amazing the things that come out of that platform, because that's then where you're able to give them a voice to voice out some of the things that they won't necessarily go and find a CSR to because they are all in one room and they all in unison, they're able to then communicate voice out, this is what is happening with me. Perhaps I'm not getting the work that I should be getting. Then we then look at, okay, how can we best assist you? Go sit with the manager, the lead, or the coach, and we say, these are the things that you need to, these are the gaps you need to close in order to assist this person. And it helps because this network is run by them. They chair it. We just sit in and listen, and they run it. They look at, because we're a consulting company, we're able to track what people do using some utilization to track your utilization because they're clocking their hours. So then we're able to go, they go through the reports and they say, how are you planned this week? How are you utilized? What are the gaps? How come you didn't meet your target? And then we're able to go back and say, okay, let's go sit with the manager and say, look, there's certain things that need to happen in order to ensure that this person gets the experience that we have promised as an organization that they're going to be getting. So important for organizations to create those platforms to allow those learners to voice out some of those issues that they're experiencing on the ground.
So this is incredible content, guys. So there are certain responsibilities that employers must have 100%. To create an environment and hold managers accountable.
Absolutely.
To check whether those managers are teaching people the right thing, particularly giving them skills, not just theory. Sometimes you don't need another degree. You need someone to actually give you the skills. 100%. And what you're also saying, on the other hand, if I'm young as well, then I must also come to the party with the initiative 100%. And the accountability and so on. And there's a point that you were making there around the fact that you are an entrepreneurially minded person. Even when you come to corporate, you are able to move quicker. And I just thought about, isn't it interesting that if maybe we teach entrepreneurship and we allow people to experiment with businesses, maybe at high school, at varsity, they'll probably be better suited for the world of work. And then you get someone who is that entrepreneur that you're talking about, but they come with a certain mindset that that understands that I have to use this job as a stepping stone to whatever, and I'm taking accountability. That's such a good idea.
That's long overdue. The entrepreneurship thing is long overdue.
Yeah.
I think we've spoken about it quite a lot, to say it needs to start from that level. I think if you look at some schools, they do it. Yes, but it would be those private schools. But if you look at the public sector education, I don't know if we do that. But I think we just have to be deliberate and start introducing entrepreneurship there. So I always talk about curriculum integration. Someone who is doing arts, they must be taught about technology, they must be taught about entrepreneurship. Because the world has changed in such a way that even the nature of work is... It's changing. It's not linear. It's not permanent. It's it's consulting employment. It's gigging, but also it's transdisciplinary. You know, where you want people who are multi-skilled. And I'm happy to say that, for example, in SA, South Africa, I mean, the government has started introducing your 4IR content there. But I'm saying it must be integrated still. So if we start teaching entrepreneurship at that level, by the time people finish, you know, it's embedded in their minds. It's something that's easy. Then they are able to look at, okay, I've done a particular degree, or I've gained a skill. How do I commercialize? Because that mindset has been built in. And whether they go entrepreneurship or starting their own business or working for a company, the fact that they have that mindset, it helps them, it helps the organization to grow. And I think that's what we need to be focusing on. And looking at that, the fact that, you know, any backbone of the economy is around SMEs, basically. So we need to drive that. But I'm not sure if we are doing it. And doing it right, you know, looking at other case studies from international companies who have done this thing very well.
This segue gives us a nice segue to what we initially thought we were going to talk about. I see our team is not going to even show what to call this episode. Because we're having great conversations, but it's various topics, which is really, really nice. I'm thinking about this, what we've spoken about, the fact that sometimes organizations do not create platforms for people to talk. And then we say people are going, they don't want to stay, they're job hopping, they are not interested in staying the course. But have we thought about the climate that we've created? You know, I was thinking about this the other day and say sometimes we have brilliant young talent.
Yes.
And one of the problems that we sometimes face is, I don't know if you've seen this, is that as an HR director, you see a brilliant young talent, right? You're spotting this talent, and you want to make sure that they stay in this organization, but maybe they are too junior for you to report to you directly. And then you put them under a manager, and you want to make sure that please nurture this talent, and we really want, but you lose contact with that young person. the manager that you, firstly, they feel like you've imposed this person on yes. them, and maybe they're also threatened by how brilliant this young person is. They choke them, and then this young person goes. You wonder why they're going. Maybe you organize a coffee and say, can I understand what we've done? But they're scared that if I talk,
yeah.
I don't understand the relationship between the CEO or Caesar and that manager. Maybe I shouldn't burn my bridges and so on. Now they've gone. They are disappointed. You are disappointed. There's something that is not happening right in that talent management and retaining people.
Yeah. No, it's a challenge. Mm. It's a big challenge. And I mean, we also see it in our environment. I think for me, a key is to keep that constant engagement. Mm. Try and keep the constant engagement, even though you may not be in touch necessarily on a daily basis, just in terms of what's happening on the ground. Just try and find ways to find out what is actually happening. And you are right. I mean, one of the reasons, the main reasons why I feel people leave organizations is because of their leaders, right? So unfortunately, our leaders, first of all, they set a tone for how, for the organization's culture. And how people behave within an organization. Mm. So, for an example, if you have leaders that don't hold people appropriately accountable, it becomes a problem. And when I say hold people appropriately accountable, I mean both when people are doing good and also when people are not doing good. Mm. Because those things basically are things that are observed by employees across the organization. Mm. So when leaders are not able to, for example, reward and recognize people who are doing good, it becomes a problem for people who are great talent and are doing great things. And when leaders are not able to hold people appropriately accountable when they're doing something that is not right, it becomes a problem for all the people who are behaving in the right manner, because why should I do it? Mm. If nothing happens to this person and they can behave however they want to behave, or they perform however they want to perform, why should I put out the best of me out there? And it really is a problem. I think what is important is then to focus your development on that layer of leaders. And we, from our perspective, we run coaching programs specifically for leaders, and we whether it's through surveys, I mean, there's various platforms, right? It's either through surveys, anonymous surveys, where we get the feedback, we then send them for coaching. We have an executive coach. We send them for various coaching programs, and then we really get a lot of value out of it, because then we get to understand what are the issues, because sometimes the issues are wider than just a person being a not engaging leader. Sometimes the issues are personal, and our coaches are able to then hone in into that and find out what are the things that are perhaps leading the leader to behave in a certain way in an environment.
But let's also be honest. Sometimes the leader is a star performer. He brings in the numbers, but he's a terrible human being.
Yes.
And we look the other way because, yes, this guy brings in the numbers.
You know, there was actually, I dealt with a case once when I was working for a bank. There was this gentleman. I mean, everyone, he had a very high turnover rate. And, people were leaving, people were very unhappy. But now he was a star performer, right? Loved by clients. And it's very hard for a business to make a decision to say, listen, sorry, you're not good for the organization. Perhaps you're creating a toxic environment. And I think as organizations, we need to learn to ask the right questions to people like that. So I remember I was sitting with one of the leaders, and it was the three of us, and we're talking about some of the things that people are bringing up and so on. And I asked him one question. I said, do you actually like leading people? And I said, if you were to be given an opportunity to not have anyone reporting to you, but to rather play a specialist role, so you'll do everything else and not have people reporting to you, would you take that opportunity? And I said, yes, actually, I do not like leading people. Wow. So, because people, and this is constantly the what we get wrong as organizations. We think our star performers will make good leaders. Mm. They don't necessarily make good leaders. And sometimes they don't want to be leaders. They just want to be stretched this way. They want you to give them more responsibility, more fulfilling work. And we need to, as organizations, to create reward structures that are able to compensate them for being
where they are,
and also for getting for doing jobs that are stretched instead of going up higher in the hierarchy. Because so that's not necessarily
enlarging your job,
put them on projects, on special projects, let them do those special projects, but don't give them people to actually lead
you. Sabelo, I can see you are dying to talk. Yes.
Yeah, you know, I'm coming from that business school environment, and I'm thinking about a program that we once had. It was leadership for specialists, the people that you're talking about. But also in me building my own business, I've actually experienced what you're talking about. We get this guy. This guy is sharp and brings in the numbers, colorful, clients love him. But when it came to the people issues, terrible, you know, terrible. And they hated him and they would start resigning. So I think I just wanted to agree with Caesar here to say, you know, it's
the team is saying Caesar is too far from the from the mic. Yeah, that's what you said. We're not even editing that time.
But so I think for me, I think broadly speaking, it is a leadership issue, because there is that famous saying that people don't leave your corner, they leave managers and leaders.
And
if there's no congruence between top management and bottom management, then, you know, you as a CEO, you can have, you know, great mission, you love your people, but do you actually develop your managers, enable them, so that we talk about enabling leadership within the organization, working both in and outside of the organization, on the organization, to make sure that we have competent, capable leaders. Once you have that, it means then they will be able then to develop I don't want to use the term subordinates. What can I replace? Because I hate using subordinates.
Direct reports.
direct reports. Yeah. And then it's known. It's a culture thing that, you know, if we're a high performing organization, we are a high performing organization. If we are not working, the system will chuck you out. It speaks to how we bring in people in the organization.
Yeah.
I think where we met, I was talking about employee value proposition. Mm-hmm. That is so important in making sure that you have people who come in here and they enjoy what they do. But as an organization, you create that environment where people can thrive and shine and, you know, debate. They are not stifled. You don't have managers who are scared of this young person who's coming up with ideas, but actually, you know, they will enable them. I always say I always hire people who are smarter than me, because I want them to shine and make me look good, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it is because I do not want to be intimidated by someone who is very smart, because I know that they will do whatever that they do, it's in the interest of the business. And that is so important in making sure that we grow as a business, but also you allow people to do what they love. And when people do what they love, you'll find that it is always linked to their purpose.
Yeah.
So if you bring in someone and they do something that they don't love, they don't like, they are just there because of the salary, then the question is, how are you living your purpose as a person? If you are not, you'll be frustrated, and then you want to leave, and you'll fight, and then you'll go eventually.
Yeah.
All right. I think one of the things we're realizing as we're having this conversation is that, generally speaking, and I think I've seen this before, senior people in organizations, the exco, wants to create this amazing culture. And the people who report to the exco members have a better experience of an organization than people who report to some of the middle managers. Sometimes leaders want to create a culture where I only want to hold you accountable for output. I don't care where you are.
Yeah.
Just give me numbers. I'm not going to bother you that you were not here at 8:05. I want results. But you find that that culture is just not translating to first line managers, middle managers, and you find that the people, I think that the people who report to a lot of middle managers in organizations are having a totally bad experience as opposed to people who report to some of the exco teams. And you find the CEO is baffled. He doesn't understand what he has done wrong because the staff engagement numbers are saying people are having a bad experience. You have created an amazing culture for your direct reports. You're like, what's going on here? How do we then try our best to make sure that this culture infiltrates to the people that we want? And we've already spoken about the fact people leave managers. So because I'm having a bad experience, I'm leaving this organization, but this organization was probably the right organization to be in. And if I'm that employee, what should I be doing? Maybe navigate my way to a different part of the organization, or what should I be doing?
I think the onus is really on leadership itself to do something about it, because if we as a top leadership do not, when issues are brought to us and we do not take the appropriate action at the right time to try and resolve issues, unfortunately we're then seen as, well, this is the culture, this is what I have to deal with. But people don't really have to deal with managers that are disengaged, managers who basically don't care about the people, because a person is more than just a, you know, sometimes leaders just treat people like means to an end. And ideally you want them to, you want leaders who are, who care for their people, number one, and who also are able to, you know, create an environment where their people, you know, are able to achieve personal growth as well as, you know, growth in terms of the profession. So
I think one of the things, and I speak a lot about it, is that I am not sure if leaders understand their people. The issue of, you know, we talk about diversity, but I'm just not too sure if they really, really understand where their people come from, their circumstances. Yes. You know, there's this model that I like where we do timeline exercises, but it looks at everything about this person. It's an identity model, but it looks at where your employees, where do you operate as a business, but where do they come from? Because they are at different levels. Yes, you might have created the strategy. This is how we want to do things, the culture, but it is failing to cascade to that level simply because the lower you go, we don't actually spend time in understanding the employees. But I just think if the leader themselves, the leaders themselves, they understand their managers and show them, this is how I want to understand you. It's easy, you know, managers, they like copying and pasting. Yes. Then it's easy for them to say, okay, I can then take that to down to the level of my direct reports in terms of understanding them. And then how then do I create an environment that is conducive where they can then thrive? I make the example that I used to stay in Alex. Far East, there's a place called Far East, and there's Alex, the old Alex. But it's very interesting when we did an immersion with an international company. Then you go, you know, across and you start in Sandhurst. Like, wow, this mall. Only four people are staying here, or two people are staying here. And then you go to Alex, and then you know, this small room, and you see the people who are staying there. It's a lot of them. And you are thinking, your employee is actually coming from this environment to come and work at your restaurant in Sentin or any other business in Sentin. Have you taken the time to actually understand their social circumstances? I don't think we have done that enough. Yes, the person wants the job, you know, they want the salary. But I think we need to be deliberate in terms of understanding where our people are coming from. Then we can then start having the right conversations. You're saying, you know, leaders are baffled. It's because they don't actually address the issues that employees themselves deal with. They will take the guy who comes from Alex, compare him or her with the guy who comes from Sandhurst.
Mm.
Yeah, but this one is performing.
Yeah.
And then you aggravate towards those who are that performing.
Yeah.
And then you leave this, and you know, this diamond as well. But because they are going through some circumstances, and you fail to create an environment where they live their purpose and shine,
yeah,
then you lose them, and then you wonder, why am I losing this person?
Mm.
So it's a very complex issue in terms of how do we make sure that, you know, we create that environment. Even when you look at top employer companies,
yeah,
you still find people who leave because of managers, you know. That's who true. Are not really good. And I think they are not, it's not a case of they are not good, it's a case of they don't understand their people, where they come from. So I'm trying to bring in the social element here, that is so important here.
So the team tells us, because guys, we have a team, you know.
We're left with 4 minutes.
4 minutes. And we haven't even talked about some of the things we wanted to talk about. But so,
no, I wanted to say, oh, sorry.
No, you go. This is
no, I actually wanted to say what you're saying is so important. Because, so for an example, when I meet with my team every Monday morning at 9 o'clock, they know we have a team meeting, which is, you know, just to look at the week ahead and also what has happened in the past, and also just for me to give them feedback in terms of what's happening in the business, if there's things that have come up.
Mm.
And I always start the meeting by doing a check-in. And check-ins are so important.
Mm.
A check-in and saying, guys, how was your weekend?
Mm.
Tell me about your weekend. What did you do? And it's amazing the stuff that comes out of just that discussion. Sometimes we end up spending actually half an hour to 45 minutes just talking about what has happened over the weekend. Because someone will share that, you know what, I had to go to Bulukwane and I had to come back this morning because my grandmother this. And you're like, oh, okay. So that's why. So at least you get to understand, you know, where this person is in terms of their life. Just little things like that. Just finding out how was your weekend. You can get a lot out of it. Then at least you know how to go about the day. Because now you know how this one is feeling. They've just lost a loved one. They've come from a funeral. So, you know,
be mindful
of how you engage with them.
Instead, we say, how many grannies do you actually have? You've been going to funerals for the past 4 years. All right, so I'm loving the conversation. We are really getting some really nice gold. So then thinking about people who leave and people who go, obviously there are people that we actually want you to go, right? In an organization, there are certain people you want to make sure that they stay, but some people actually maybe should kind of leave.
Yeah.
How do we strike that balance to make sure that it is the right people who stay? Because I think sometimes we have people who've, I think it's better for people who resign and go than people who resign and stay.
Oh.
Because I think we have those.
Yeah.
What do we call them now?
There's
a term for it now.
There was
the great resignation.
Or the quiet quitting.
Yeah, quiet.
Quiet quitting, yes.
Silent quitting.
Silent quitting.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's really, really bad. And I think from time to time, you'll have those people.
Mm.
So it speaks to the issue of constant engagement. But I would say, if people are not performing, if you have the right system and right leadership, then they must go. You can't say, you know, we want this person to go, but it's difficult for them to go.
Again, goes back to that leadership issue.
Yeah.
Mm. If you have the right leadership, who hold people appropriately accountable. So if a person is not performing, you're not expecting that person during a performance review is going to get a 3 when they're supposed to be getting a 2. you know? But then you find that because leaders are so... they don't want to have difficult conversations.
Yeah.
It's so hard for them to have a difficult conversation around performance. It can be for various reasons. Maybe they haven't been giving you feedback anyways throughout the year. So
that's
now they're
problem.
Feeling like, I can't now tell you right at the end of the process that you're not performing.
Mm.
So they haven't been doing their part in terms of ensuring that you are doing what you need to do, and they're doing check-ins and saying, sorry, you know, this is the feedback we're getting from clients, or you're not doing what you need to do. And then you end up having people who are actually non-performers, but who are rated as performers, and they just sit there and do the bare minimum. What do you then do to the talented guy who knows for a fact that this person is not performing? They're going to want to leave.
Yeah.
Because there is no point. I'm gonna also, we're gonna get the same rating, we're gonna get the same increase, but I'm putting so much work into this company. So,
and some leaders think they're doing the person a favor, but not by not holding them accountable. No. But that's not true.
That's not true, because then you, I promise you, you create the dynamic you really don't want to create in your team.
Especially when you say then the right people leave.
They leave.
Yeah.
Because they're left with the point.
Yeah, what is the point?
Stars want to hang out with
stars. I know a company that we work with, like, oh, we have a high staff turnover, but the people who are leaving are the people that we want them to stay. Yes. And the ones who are like, I'm not going anywhere. Yes. I've been here for 20 years.
They can't sort of like
want them to leave, yeah.
They can't even find jobs.
Yeah. But the question of like striking the balance, I think for me, we need to focus on reinforcing positive behaviors or what works. I'm a firm believer of focusing on what's working and reinforcing that. And the stuff that does not work, even, you know, when people leave, I look at why people stay and I work on that, work on that. Yes, people will always leave, but I just don't look at, I can learn from that in terms of, okay, maybe these are things that, you know, get people to leave.
Yeah.
But I want to focus on what's working, what makes them tick when they're here. Why are they here? So I'll strike the balance like that.
I like that. And I want to push you a little bit on that. Maybe as we're nudging ourselves to the close, generally, why then do people stay? So that we can then zone in on that and make sure we reinforce that behavior. In your view, why do people stay generally?
Money. I'm kidding. There are two factors, you know, and the other one, I know that we don't get to talk about it a lot, but for me, it's the job satisfaction part. Have you created the right environment, a positive, you know, attitude? Do you actually allow people to live their purpose? Do you pay them well? You spoke about rewards earlier on. Are there growth advancement opportunities within? Do you walk the talk as a leader? Do you really allow people to shine and they love this thing? You know, they feel like they own it. Where I've stayed, it was because I was given the job to do and I was supported to do that. But also, maybe it's the social element. You know, people can just stay in the company because where I'm staying, I love the community, the area. I love the schools. You know, it's a great safe environment. I don't want to move. Therefore, I will just stay in the company, work in the company. Yeah. I've got family ties here. These are my people. So they help me somehow to be able to perform better in the organization itself. Yes. So I see a lot of people. I know there was a person that we wanted to bring to Joburg. Like, you know, I'm resigning. I'm leaving. But because you are now moving me from my community, from where I grew up and from my social network to a different environment. Therefore, I will leave. So there's always that internal and the external external factors influencing that.
That is very interesting because our initial topic was job embeddedness and the suggestion that when people are embedded, it's because they have certain links, relationships in the organizations that are too strong. But you are adding another one that actually people could be embedded in the community.
Yes.
And we think people are staying because we're doing well, but they're actually embedded in the community. It might not have a lot to do with us, which is very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Cesar, maybe lastly from your side, if you want to comment maybe about people who stay or people who go, are there any other things that you will go out of this room and say, I should have said that you want to that you want to highlight?
Well, outside of what has been mentioned is, I suppose because we're in a consulting environment, it's a little bit different. So what we've done is we've given people an opportunity to choose whether they want to stay, to be in the organization as permanent, or you can do as an independent contractor, therefore allowing you the flexibility of not only working for us but working for other people, so that you're able to. So we're finding that there's some people actually leave organization on a permanent basis and they go work, come back and work for us as independent contractors, and we're finding a lot of that in the consulting space. So it's great.
So the flexibility thing is a big deal.
It's a big deal.
And sometimes you lose someone only because all they wanted was to do something else, and you could have engaged them and said, let's give you that flexibility that you want.
No, we made that mistake where we took someone who was an independent contractor, was high performing, fantastic, brought him on board. We said, no, we want to make you permanent, and we're going to give you people.
Mm.
It didn't last. It was two, 3 months. He decided to leave. But now we've then engaged him again and said, okay, come back as an independent contractor. He says, I'm more than happy. More than happy to come back as an independent contractor. I don't want to be leading people. I just want to do what I need to do. And I want the flexibility to be able to manage my time, manage my day, and get various sources of income. So, yeah, we need to just think about that flexibility as organizations on how we can provide that, especially for people who also have that entrepreneurial mind, who want to do other things. Be open to it and understand what is it that you want to do. Let's work out. If you have to work 4 days in a week, be flexible to allow people to do that.
Be
so
flexible.
That they can be flexible.
It's not as if it's 1983. Like, you must work for us only. I think sometimes this conflict of interest policies, we exaggerate them too much, and then we lose talent and ethical talent was never going to do anything wrong anyway.
Sorry, in my company, we actually have consulting employees. We call them consulting employees.
Yes.
They are sort of here, like treated as employees, but they are allowed to go and do whatever that they like to do. And I think the beauty about that is that it allows people to go and learn other skills, and they bring them in directly or directly into your organization. Yet if you take this person and you want them to be here all the time, and they don't then get to learn other things, be exposed to other environment, then your organization does not benefit from consulting, from just having a permanent employee.
Yeah.
You'd have someone who knows this is how things are done.
And
yet if you allow them to experience other organizations, then they come back with something different and they help you grow.
Oh, that's powerful. In fact, you're getting someone to then explore and then bring these things here. I'm hearing flexibility, a bit of autonomy, change your mindset about leadership practices, allow people a little bit of space. So we've run out of time. We want to close and we want to hear some maybe last words from our guests. Firstly, thank you to both of them. Time really does fly when you're having fun.
Sam really started does. Nervous.
And now they can't stop talking.
Yeah. But I go.
Oh my God.
So maybe let's start with Caesar. Any last words? How do people follow you, connect with you, or the company, whatever? Do you want to be followed?
That's the question.
There's now unfollowed. What is that show? Unfollowed.
There's a show called Unfollowed. It's hectic. Eh?
We're becoming too much, honestly.
Last words, Gay, if you don't want to be followed anyway.
Yeah, no, I don't mind people following me on LinkedIn.
that's how you know that it's professional. Someone was saying, LinkedIn. By the way, when you're dating someone and they start speaking HR language, you must know it's over. You know?
I know.
Please, can you tell me your schedule for fetching the kids? You know, this has become very professional. So they want them to follow you on LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn.
Okay, perfect. On LinkedIn. And on LinkedIn, you are Caesar Panza.
Caesar Panza on LinkedIn. Okay. But it's been fantastic spending time with you and having these discussions.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I always
there's a lot to say.
There's a lot to say. You must
come
back.
Yeah, I must come back.
You must come back. Sabelo, any last words from you? How do you follow what you do? In fact, we didn't even get to talk about the IPM and I know I'll be seeing you at the IPM convention. Tell us briefly about it. How do our listeners find more information? Especially leaders. I think one of the things I learn when I go to the IPM convention is that we actually need leaders who are not in HR to come learn the things that you guys have spoken about here.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you so much. I think it's been a great platform. Maybe before I talk about the IPM and this, let me just do my closing and say organizations are about people and it's important to have solid, decisive leadership in terms of making sure that we have vibrant, growing organizations. When people decide to stay, they must stay because they love it. When people decide to leave, they must leave not because we are pushing them to leave, but because they want to go and explore other things that they love. And we must be able to allow them to leave. There's the concept of detachment as a secret of success. I think sometimes organizations, they don't want to detach, let go of this person, let them go, you know. So the IPM is, it's a professional membership body for the HR and people in management. I think for us is to grow people who are in HR, grow people who are in management, exposing them to different, you know, concepts and tools, and making sure that they build successful organizations. So the conference in Sun City, as you know, it's our premium event every year. It attracts international speakers, local speakers, international speakers, local speakers to look into different issues around talent management, leadership. Now we've added another one called ESG, diversity.
Oh, nice. Yes.
So, and it culminates to an award ceremony. I mean, where we recognize and celebrate people who are in HR who are doing amazing things. The likes of Susan, I think I'll nominate you.
Yes.
Oh,
are the nominations open?
Yeah, the nominations are closing on the 15th. But yeah, we're really about accelerating the development of HR professionals so that they can help in building better organizations. Yeah, but as you can see, my profile, you said so many things.
Absolutely.
But I'll keep it to the IPM.
Do you want to mention the others a little bit of what you do?
Yeah, you know.
As we close.
You know, I was part of the board. Then I was asked to step in. So I'm actually an interim CEO to come and turn the IPM around, turn around strategies. I saw they're like, okay, they are right. But myself, I run a company called Sisekelo Institute of Business and Technology. It's a skills development provider created both locally and internationally. So we work with a lot of young people. We take them through learnerships. Some we take with a concept that, from learnership to entrepreneurship. We've developed quite a few. We've got amazing success stories there. But also, I've got an IT, Sebenguni Investments. It's an IT company that builds education technology for the education sector, starting from early childhood development to your normal, learner management systems. And I hope that next year I'll be doing my... I was provisionally accepted to do my PhD, and I want to focus on the public sector education in terms of digital transformation.
Sure.
And that fits into all the work that I do with IPM, with Sisekelo, and with Sebenguni Investments. So
these guys in the studio, they after 1 hour, they charge you every minute. They don't play.
Okay.
They don't play around it already. They're looking at me saying, no, we don't.
Are they coming to the IPM?
Oh, guys, by the way, are we going to the IPM convention? We're getting a thumbs up. It looks like we might be broadcasting from the IPM convention in one way or another. Make sure that we are going, Cesar. You remember when we used to go to these amazing conventions, right? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Big thanks to Cesar and Sabelo. What a great episode. We started wanting to talk about something else and we ended up talking about all kinds of things. But they are good. They are so powerful. That's exactly why we are here. Maybe we'll have you back another day. But thank you for joining us today on Organizational Behavior with Sipiwe Moyo. Until next time, keep exploring the science behind workplace dynamics, making informed decisions and creating workplaces where talent thrives. As we always say, work doesn't have to suck. Thank you. Goodbye. Go work. You've been watching this forever.
Thank you so much.
Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.